My guest would be Diana Abu-Jaber, whose new book, Crescent, came out a few months ago in April. And interestingly, she has made the list of Christian Science Monitor's book for the year. Interestingly enough, again, in addition to Diana Abu-Jaber's book, there is a Azar Nafisi, an Iranian woman writer, who wrote Reading Lolita in Tehran. Interestingly, both are from different points of views, but both made it to the Christian Science Monitor's list, and it's indeed an encouraging moment for us as Middle Easterns in this country that two of our finest ladies are on top of the list for the best books of the year. Let's listen to a little piece of music then while we're trying to bring on Diana Abu-Jaber. Okay, we finally got Diana on the air. Diana Abu Jaber's new novel, The Crescent, won the National Endowment for the Arts Award and was published by Norton in April 2003, and has been published in 6 countries to date. Diana was actually living in Portland, Oregon, and she was teaching at Portland State University, but now she's on leave and teaches as a visiting associate professor at the University of Miami. And in addition, her newest book, which is a food memoir entitled The Language of Baklava, will be published in 2004 by Pantheon Vantage Books. Her work has appeared in such publications as Good Housekeeping, Miss Salon, Miss Magazine, Salon, The New York Times, and The Nation, and featured on NPR. Her first novel, Arabian Jazz, won the Oregon Book Award. I know she also used to write even for Oregonian as a reviewer. She's one of my I can say best friends in communication so far. So I like to welcome her to the show, and it's an honor and pleasure to talk to you, Diana. Welcome.
Thank you, Gudars. I'm delighted.
Okay, let's start with just a simple question. Maybe you can tell us about yourself and where were you born and all those typical bio data that is typical. So let's start from there.
Oh, the Charles Dickens details.
You don't need to tell us when were you born, but just where.
Okay, thank you. I was born a long, long time ago. And actually, I was born in the States, in Syracuse, New York. And my family moved back and forth between New York and Jordan. So I was raised both in the United States and in the Middle East. And both countries were very important to me in my upbringing. And then I decided to go to college in the United States, and that was sort of how my adult identity got formed. So it was really in college that I kind of made my choice.
Well, the question is, question for all of us who have background from the Middle East and also have been raised up in here, how do you identify yourself with the best? I know you are not mixed American Jordanian, but European Jordanian? Is that
good? I'd probably say I like Arab American because it sounds very inclusive, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. My father is Jordanian, but also Palestinian. My mother is American. And so I'm kind of, what do you call me, a fusion. I'm a fusion American.
Yeah. But how does it feel to be to have such a background? Mm. What are the advantages?
It's an interesting time. I think it's a very hard time to be a person from the Middle East in America. It's been a very trying couple of years, as you know. And we've all had to kind of struggle to find our place right now. I have found that people have been very, very receptive to my books and my writing, especially lately. A lot of people have been very generous and have approached me and said, you know, like after they read Crescent, a few people have told me, thank you, I never got a real Iraqi perspective before, and I appreciate getting some of this glimpse. So I do feel that that the United States has become receptive, at least in certain sectors, but that those of us from the Middle East do have to continue speaking and attempting to reach out to make our voices heard.
Actually, this reminds me that you wrote several shining op-eds for during the war in Washington Post and elsewhere. And I know that you are not a political activist per se, but I remember you wrote me that you feel you need to do something about it.
That's right.
Can
That's
you talk
right.
about
well,
that
you know,
feeling?
It is the time that we're living in. And I sometimes feel that there's a lot of fear in the Arab American community. A lot of people are worried about being stigmatized or somehow stereotyped as one of those terrorists. You know, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear at large in our society. And I feel that as a writer that I have almost a kind of moral or social obligation to try to speak up. And I try to teach classes on Arab literature. You know, I write my books. And I read from Arabian Jazz, or I'll read from Crescent, and I'll talk to people about just the day-to-day experience of Arabs in this country, and how Arabs are like everyone else. We have food, and we have love, and we have beauty and richness, and we want the same things that all Americans do. So it's really part of a kind of social work that I see in terms of speaking out.
One of my favorites in that period was I guess, creative writing lessons for George W. Bush.
Oh, that, you remember that one?
Yeah, that was very interesting. How did you become a writer? And I mean, what does it take to be a successful writer?
Well, it takes a kind of dogged determination, a blind kind of willful, I think, ignorance, you know, because you have to endure so much rejection. You have to endure so many people telling you, no, no, don't do this, that you almost have to be a little bit perverse to be a writer. You know, I remember when I was first working on Arabian Jazz, and it was sent to the first publisher, and she wrote back to me and said, well, I like this book, but this title, Arabian Jazz, I don't think I can publish a book with the word Arabian in it. And, you know, it's like stuff like this. I still encounter weird things like this all the time. So part of me just sort of feels like, okay, to write, you just have to put your heart and soul into it and continue doing it no matter what anybody says to you. And that's what I try to do.
These stories, how do you create them? Do you have, you have in mind, obviously, but do they have any existence surrounding, or you just put them together?
Well, the characters. I was very lucky, I think, that I grew up in a household full of storytellers. My father is a gigantic storyteller. It's one of his favorite things. He still does. And so at our dinner table, we would sit around. My mom would do the dishes. Dad would sit there and tell the stories. And in Crescent, what I did was I had an uncle figure who tells stories to his niece. And that oral tradition and that quality of the spoken word is very important to me. It was something that I wanted to try to suggest in the novel and see if there was some way to capture some of that essence, because I think it's a wonderful privilege being a child of an immigrant. It gives us material. It gives us a sense of history and a sense of loss and nostalgia, even for places that aren't really ours. And I draw on a lot of that material when I write my novels. I feel that my father's sense of Jordan of the 1950s and of the 1960s, is something that is very rich and something on the point of perhaps disappearing. So I try to capture some of that.
Okay, maybe you can give us a little bit the story of Crescent.
Sure.
What is it about? And well, later on we'll come back and ask you to read from it.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Crescent is about a young woman who is a chef. She is also of Iraqi descent. Her father was Iraqi. Her mother was American, and she now works at a Middle Eastern restaurant in Los Angeles. And so a lot of Crescent is about food. It's about Arabic food. It's about Middle Eastern and Persian and Turkish food, and a lot of those recipes kind of come into play. And food becomes one of the vehicles by which the main character falls in love with a professor at UCLA. The professor happens to be an Iraqi exile who comes to UCLA to teach linguistics, and he's very exotic and mysterious, and there's something elusive about him that our main character needs to discover. So it kind of intertwines the themes of love and loss and exile. Doing it through talking about food being a way that people communicate and live together and draw close to each other, because obviously food was very important to me when I was growing up, and it became a natural metaphor in my book.
Let me read a little piece, just what you talked about is, kind of reminded me of this passage. It's about the Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh.
And you say, look at us, Serene's uncle says, sitting around here like a bunch of Americans with our crazy turkey. All right, now I want to make a big toast. Here's to sweet, unusual families, pleasant dogs who behave, food of this nature, the seven types of smiles, the crescent moon, and a nice cup of tea with mint every day. Good luck, and God bless us, everyone. They nod and drink glasses. Is that for Christmas? Janoob asked. When you say that part about God bless, really it's nice for any time, Aziz says. What are the seven types of smiles? Eliza asks. Victor waves his hand in a discreet don't ask gesture. Han sits across the table from Serene, and Nathan sits next to Han. King Baibar roams from one set of knees to the other, accepting crumbs and table offering. Serene only half listens to the dinner talk. She tries to focus on the food, professionally evaluating her work. But the table is so lively and busy, it's hard to pay attention to much of anything. She feels the electricity of Han's presence. He's the professor. Serene puts a fork full of sweet potatoes into her mouth. The potatoes are soft as velvet. The gravy satiny. It is as if she can taste the life inside all those ingredients. The stem that the cranberries grew on, the earth inside the bread, even the warm blood that was once inside the turkey, it comes back to her. The small secret that was always her. For years, the only truth she seemed to possess, that food was better than love, surer, truer, more satisfying and enriching, as long as she could lose herself in the rhythms of peeling an onion, she was complete and whole, and as long as she could cook, she would be loved. I think that's the heart of the Middle East.
It's true, that connection of food and love. It's really crucial, I think. We probably should point out that King Babar is a dog.
That's why he's a dog who behaves.
Right. I got worried there when I...
one question, actually, I don't know, an Iraqi friend asked me that some of the foods and names that you have used are not really Iraqi, they're more Jordanian. Was the story from the beginning supposed to be Iraqi family, or it changed?
Well, no, it was actually inspired by some Iraqi students that I was working with. I was teaching a class on Arab American literature, and these students kept bringing me these beautiful foods, and we ended up spending a lot of time sitting around and talking about different foods and comparing them. And so it became a kind of tutorial for me. Now, if some of the foods are more Jordanian than Iraqi, that's just my own limitations in the kitchen. But I wanted to tell a story from an Iraqi perspective, because I did feel that we had not gotten that story yet. I had seen that Denzel Washington movie about the Persian Gulf War, which I can't remember the title of it now, something like Glory Under Fire. And it was about the Persian Gulf War told from a heroic American perspective. And I thought, this was several years ago, I thought, you know what, it's time for us to hear a little bit more about other perspectives. And what was it like to be Iraqi during the Persian Gulf War? Can we talk about that side of things as well? So that was really what got me started. And this was years before we were going to go to war or anything, you know, more recently that's been going on. So I thought, yeah, let's do this. Let's go from an Iraqi perspective. I did it because I thought it was kind of a calm topic, if that makes sense, because nothing was really going on. There were the sanctions that were happening, but there was no real talk of war at that time. This was in the late 90s, and I just thought, yeah, let's try this out for size and see what that's like. And so I started talking with Iraqi friends and Iraqi family and interviewing people, and that's sort of how Crescent got its early start, and I just followed it from there.
Okay, Diana, let's listen to a little piece of music. It's the half of the hour, and we want to do an ID for the station.